A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
42%. That's the number of adults who say they've shared a secret that wasn't theirs to share, according to one survey that tracked this. Not a majority, but not a rounding error either. Nearly half the population walking around with someone else's information in their mouth. Daniel's been thinking about the other end of that spectrum. The people who don't talk.
And he's asking two things. First, what actually separates the naturally discreet from the born gossip? Is it wiring? Is it training? Is it something else? And second, where does extreme discretion become a literal product that people pay a premium for?
The industries where keeping your mouth shut isn't professional courtesy. It's the entire value proposition. He mentioned high net worth employers, celebrities, the kind of client who filters for silence before they filter for competence.
There's a paradox sitting at the center of this. Discretion is one of those traits everyone claims to admire and almost nobody practices consistently. The incentives are all wrong. Social media rewards disclosure. Every post, every hot take, every intimate detail gets measured in likes and shares. The person who says nothing gets no dopamine hit. The person who says nothing doesn't trend.
The person who says nothing doesn't even get invited to the group chat after a while. There's a social cost to being the one who never dishes.
So we've got this virtue that's universally praised and systematically disincentivized. And yet, at the very top of the wealth pyramid, it's the single most valuable trait a person can have. That gap is what Daniel's poking at. So let's map this properly. First, the psychology. What predicts discretion versus gossip at the personality level? Then the markets where that wiring translates into a career asset.
And I want to push on something before we get into the research. The word gossip does a lot of moral lifting that maybe it shouldn't. Most people who talk about other people aren't mustache-twirling villains. They're just running the standard human operating system. The question is why some people run a different one.
Right. And the best framework we have for this is the Big Five personality model. Openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, neuroticism. It's not perfect, but it's the most replicated structure in personality psychology, and it gives us a real map here. The research on gossip behavior is pretty consistent. The profile that correlates most strongly with gossiping is low agreeableness paired with high extroversion.
Walk me through that combination.
Low agreeableness means you're less concerned with social harmony. You're more willing to create friction. Less motivated to protect other people's feelings. High extroversion means you're energized by social stimulation. You seek out interaction. You thrive on the back and forth of conversation. Put those together and you get someone who treats information about other people as social fuel. They're not necessarily trying to hurt anyone. They're trying to be interesting at the dinner table.
So the gossip isn't the villain of a Jane Austen novel. They're just an extrovert who doesn't particularly worry about whether the subject of the story would be okay with it being told.
That's the mechanism. And it explains why moralizing about gossip doesn't work. You're not asking someone to make a different ethical choice. You're asking them to override their fundamental personality wiring. For a highly extroverted, low agreeableness person, sharing a juicy piece of information feels like completing the circuit. It's rewarding in the neurological sense.
Which brings us to the other side. What's the profile of the discreet person?
This is where it gets interesting, because discretion isn't just the absence of gossip. It's an active behavior. It's withholding. And that maps to a different cluster. High conscientiousness is the big one. Self-discipline, impulse control, the ability to deliberate before acting. The discreet person feels the impulse to share and then doesn't. That pause is conscientiousness in action.
And neuroticism plays in too, doesn't it?
It can. Moderate to high neuroticism, which is basically sensitivity to threat and negative outcomes, can make someone more cautious about what they say. They're running the consequences in their head. If I tell this story, what happens when it gets back to the person? That anxiety functions as a brake.
So the discreet person might not be more virtuous. They might just be more worried.
Or more disciplined. Or both. The point is, it's not one thing. It's a cluster of traits that produce the same observable behavior. Someone who treats information as a liability rather than a currency.
That's the distinction that clicked for me. The gossip treats information as social currency. You spend it to buy attention, to buy status, to buy connection. The discreet person treats information as a liability. You hold it because releasing it creates risk. One hoards, the other spends.
And here's the thing. Neither of these is irrational. For most of human history, sharing information about other people was genuinely useful. Evolutionary psychologists argue that gossip served a group bonding function. In a small tribe of maybe 150 people, knowing that the guy three caves down was cheating on his hunting partner was valuable information. It helped you decide who to trust, who to cooperate with. The problem isn't the mechanism, it's the scale.
Right. The mechanism evolved for an audience of 30 people around a campfire. It wasn't designed for an audience of 30,000 on a timeline.
And that's where the modern version breaks. The gossip isn't doing anything their ancestors didn't do, they're just doing it with a broadcast license.
There's another piece here that I think gets missed. Discretion isn't always innate. Sometimes it's learned as a survival instinct. Kids who grow up around sensitive information develop it the way other kids develop a flinch response.
Children of diplomats. Therapist kids. Anyone who grew up in a house where the wrong sentence at the wrong dinner party could cost someone their job.
You learn to audit every sentence before it leaves your mouth because you watched what happened when someone didn't. That's not personality, that's conditioning. But after enough years, it becomes automatic. It looks like temperament from the outside, but it started as self-preservation.
There's a concept I've seen floating around, information privilege. The idea that growing up around sensitive information gives you a different relationship to it. You don't see secrets as exciting, you see them as heavy. A burden rather than a toy.
Which is the opposite of how most people experience a secret. For most people, having a secret is uncomfortable. It wants out. The act of telling someone feels like a release.
The I shouldn't tell you this, but phenomenon. The person who says that's still getting the reward. They're signaling intimacy with the listener. I'm breaking a rule for you, while technically acknowledging the rule exists. It's the worst of both worlds, ethically speaking, but it's psychologically very satisfying.
The person who says, I can't tell you that, and stops. That's a different animal entirely. They're not getting a social reward from the near tell. They're just closing the door.
And that's the person who gets hired by a family office. Which is where we should go next, because the psychology sets up the market perfectly. Once you understand that discretion is a personality cluster and not just a moral stance, it becomes clear why certain industries pay a premium for it. They're not hiring for skills, they're hiring for wiring.
So that's the psychology. The naturally discreet person tends toward high conscientiousness, often with some neuroticism as a break, and they've internalized information as liability rather than information as currency. The gossip tends toward low agreeableness and high extroversion, treating stories about others as social fuel, not maliciously, but instinctively. Now let's look at the markets where that first profile becomes a career.
Private wealth management is the cleanest example. Family offices, the private investment firms that manage the affairs of a single ultra-wealthy family, compete on confidentiality as much as on returns. A firm like Bessemer Trust or Rockefeller Capital Management isn't just managing money, they're managing information. They know which heir is a problem, which business is struggling, which marriage is falling apart, which asset is being hidden from which spouse.
And one leak doesn't just cost them that client. It costs them every client. Because the entire value proposition is, nothing about you'll ever leave this building.
The family office industry is built on a paradox. The best marketing is having no marketing. The most successful firms are the ones you've never heard of. They don't publish case studies. They don't have glossy brochures with client testimonials. Their entire reputation travels by word of mouth among people who don't talk to journalists.
The anti-brand brand.
And the hiring process reflects that. They're not just running background checks, they're running personality assessments designed to flag the gossip profile. Low agreeableness plus high extroversion is basically a disqualifier for a family office role, even if the candidate has an MBA from Harvard and 10 years at Goldman.
Because the technical skills are table stakes, The filtering happens on a trait most industries don't even measure.
Right, and that trait commands a premium. A chief of staff at a single-family office can make significantly more than someone in an equivalent role at a public company, specifically because the pool of people who can be trusted with total information access is small. The market has priced the personality.
Let's talk about the household staff side. This is where it gets almost theatrical.
Celebrity household staff. Butlers, private chefs, yacht crew, nannies, estate managers. The baseline is an NDA that would make a defense contractor blink. But the NDA is just the legal floor. The real filter is behavioral. Agencies that place staff in high net worth homes screen for what they call invisible service.
Define that.
The ability to be present for the most intimate moments of a family's life and then functionally erase them. You saw the argument at breakfast. You know which medications are in the master bathroom. You overheard the phone call about the offshore account, and the next morning you pour the coffee with exactly the same expression you wore yesterday.
It's almost a kind of performance. You're acting like you don't know what you know.
And the best people in these roles aren't acting. They've compartmentalized. The information goes into a box marked "not mine" and stays there. Agencies test for this during the placement process. They'll seed a piece of false confidential information and watch to see if it comes back to them through any channel.
Wait, really? They plant a fake secret?
Standard practice at the high-end agencies. You tell a candidate something mildly sensitive about a fictional previous client and then monitor their social media, their references, their network. If the information surfaces anywhere, they're out. One Instagram post from a private chef showing the view from a client's terrace, even without naming the client, can end a career.
Because the terrace is geolocatable. The view tells you exactly whose house it is.
And the kind of person who hires a private chef doesn't want their dinner guests to know they have a private chef. The whole point is that it looks effortless. The staff are invisible by design.
Yacht crew takes this to an even more extreme level. I was reading about what they call the Saint-Tropez rule.
The Saint-Tropez rule is unwritten but absolute. Crew are trained to never photograph guests, never discuss guest behavior, and this is the one that gets people. Never acknowledge having seen a guest before unless the guest initiates. So you might have served someone breakfast for 2 weeks last summer, and when they step on board this season, you greet them like a stranger.
Because acknowledging that you remember them acknowledges that you remember everything else. What they drank, who they were with, what time they went to bed.
And the guest didn't hire you to be their memory. They hired you to be a function. The moment you become a person who remembers things about them, you become a liability.
That's a strange kind of dehumanization, honestly. You're being paid to not be a full person in their presence.
It is. And the people who last in these roles are the ones who can handle that psychologically. Some people find it unbearable. They need to be seen. They need to be acknowledged. Others find it almost liberating. You show up. You do the work perfectly, you leave no trace. There's a kind of craftsmanship to it.
Private aviation is the third one I want to hit. Jet charter brokers and flight crew sit at this weird intersection of logistics and intimacy.
The broker knows everything. They know the client is flying to a medical procedure they haven't told their board about. They know the client is meeting someone who isn't their spouse. They know the client is looking at a property in a market where their arrival would move prices. And the industry norm is absolute compartmentalization, even within the same company.
The term they use is need-to-know basis, right?
And they mean it literally. A broker at a firm like Sentient Jet or VistaJet might book a flight for a client and not discuss the destination with their own colleagues unless the colleague needs the information to do their job. The default assumption is that every piece of client information is siloed.
What happens when someone breaks that?
They lose the account instantly, and the story travels through the industry faster than the flight itself. The high net worth travel market is small and tightly networked. A broker who mentions a client's destination to another client, even casually, even just making conversation, has violated the fundamental terms of the relationship. They're done.
Because the client isn't just buying a plane. They're buying the guarantee that nobody knows where they're going.
And that guarantee is worth a lot. Private aviation is expensive, but the discretion premium is a meaningful slice of what you're paying for. Commercial first class gets you a nicer seat. Private aviation gets you the absence of an audience.
The last industry I want to touch is high-end real estate, specifically the off-market listing economy.
This is a whole shadow market that most people never see. Properties that sell for 8 or 9 figures and never appear on the MLS, never show up on Zillow, never have a public listing photo. The entire transaction happens in private, between agents who are chosen specifically for their ability to vet buyers without revealing the seller.
And the stakes are higher than people realize. A leak about a seller's financial distress can tank a deal. If word gets out that someone is selling because they're overleveraged, every offer drops by 10% overnight.
The Beverly Hills listings that never hit the market, those agents aren't just selling houses, they're selling confidentiality. They know which celebrity is divorcing, which tech founder is liquidating, which inherited estate is being broken up because the siblings can't agree. And they can't use any of that information to market themselves.
The best agents in that space have no public profile. You can't Google their biggest deals because those deals were never recorded anywhere searchable.
Which creates a fascinating hiring problem. How do you find someone whose entire career is invisible? You can't look at their track record because the track record is private by definition. The only way to find them is through referrals from other discreet people. The whole industry runs on a chain of trust that's completely opaque to outsiders.
There's a common thread across all four of these. Discretion in these industries isn't about secrecy, it's about predictability. The client isn't worried about the information being used maliciously. They're worried about it being used unpredictably. A gossip is a wild card. A discreet person is a known quantity.
That's the reframe that makes this make sense. Secrecy is about hiding something. Discretion is about managing who gets to know what and when. It's an information flow problem, not a concealment problem.
And the client is paying for control over that flow. They want to decide who knows about the medical procedure, who knows about the off-market listing, who knows they were on the yacht last summer. The discreet professional's job is to make sure that decision stays with the client.
Which is why the market has priced this trait so aggressively. A discreet chief of staff or broker or estate manager isn't just an employee. They're an insurance policy. They're protecting against a class of risk that no NDA can fully cover because the real damage from a leak isn't legal. It's reputational. It's relational. You can't sue your way back to being the person nobody talks about.
The supply of discreet people is small, for all the reasons we covered in the psychology section. Most people get a reward from sharing interesting information. The wiring that makes someone not feel that reward, or feel it, and override it, is unusual.
You get a premium, a discretion dividend. People who can be trusted with everything are paid more because there are fewer of them, and the cost of getting it wrong is catastrophic.
I keep coming back to something you said earlier. The gossip isn't broken. They're running standard human firmware. It's the discreet person who's running a modified version.
The modification is expensive. That's the market signal.
1989. I worked nights at a private members club in London, the kind of place where the membership list included 2 former prime ministers and a media baron who was about 6 months from being arrested. My job was to sit at a desk in the lobby from 11 at night until 7 in the morning, remember everything I saw, and repeat none of it.
What did you see?
The foreign secretary leaving through the kitchen exit at 3 in the morning. A cabinet minister who always booked the same corner table and always paid cash. A newspaper editor who would sit in the library for hours writing on club stationery and then burn the pages in the fireplace before he left. Not metaphorically, he'd stand there and watch them burn. Every time.
You just logged it.
That was the job. Log it and forget it. The club had been operating since 1860-something, and the entire business model was that what happened inside stayed inside. Members would bring people who weren't their spouses. Members would have meetings that weren't on any calendar. Members would get drunk and say things about legislation that hadn't been announced yet. And the staff were trained to be furniture.
The invisible service thing.
We didn't call it that. We called it not getting sacked. But the effect was the same. You learn to move through the building without making eye contact. You learn to hear conversations without listening to them. After about 3 months, I realized I was doing it outside the club, too. I'd be at the pub with friends and catch myself editing every sentence before I said it, running a mental check on whether anything in the story could identify anyone.
The habit doesn't have an off switch.
That's what I'm saying. Discretion sounds noble until you have to live inside it. It's not a virtue, it's a cognitive load. You're maintaining a constant mental ledger of who knows what. After 6 months, I started dreaming in Venn diagrams, overlapping circles of people and information and which circles were allowed to touch. I quit because I couldn't turn it off.
How long did it take to unlearn it?
Years. I still catch myself. Someone asks me a straightforward question, and my first instinct is to figure out why they're asking before I answer. The club trained that into me, and it never fully came out.
You're saying discretion has a cost that the market doesn't price in.
The market prices it in for the client. The client pays a premium for discreet people, but the discreet person pays a different kind of cost. You can't be selectively compartmentalized. You can't be a locked vault at work and an open book at home. The wiring doesn't work that way. You either become the kind of person who withholds, or you don't. And being that person is tiring.
The information is liability framework you lived with. It becomes identity, not just policy.
I had a wife at the time. She knew I worked at a club. She never knew which club. She never knew who the members were. She'd ask me how my night was, and I'd say, fine, and that was the whole conversation. It wasn't that I didn't trust her. It was that the habit of not telling had become so automatic that telling felt wrong, like putting a fork in the wrong drawer.
Did that contribute to the marriage ending?
I'm not going to answer that.
There?
The politician who used the kitchen exit. I never told anyone. Not my wife, not my mates, not a journalist who offered me 500 quid in 1991, which was a lot of money for a night porter. I didn't tell because telling wasn't an option. It wasn't a decision I made. It was a decision that had already been made by the person I'd become. That's what I mean about the off switch. It's not there.
The discreet professional isn't just selling a service. They're selling a piece of themselves that they can't get back.
I kept the club tie. It's in a box somewhere.
We've been talking about discretion as a marketable trait, as a personality cluster, as a competitive advantage. But Hilbert's just named the thing that sits underneath all of that. Discretion isn't free for the person who provides it. It's a tax on spontaneity. It's a permanent filter between you and everyone you talk to.
In a world that increasingly rewards disclosure, where the incentives all push toward sharing more, posting more, revealing more, the number of people willing to pay that tax is shrinking, which makes the ones who do more valuable.
That's the open question I keep landing on. Does discretion become a luxury good? Something only the wealthy can afford to hire, because only the wealthy can pay the premium that compensates for the cognitive cost Hilbert just described.
It might already be that. The family office chief of staff, the yacht steward, the off-market real estate agent, those roles exist almost exclusively at the top of the wealth distribution. The rest of us live in a world where oversharing is the default and discretion is a hobby.
As AI and surveillance eat away at whatever privacy is left, the value of a human being who can see everything and say nothing probably goes up. A person who can be trusted with total information access becomes rarer and more expensive and more as necessary.
The last human firewalls.
Yeah, and they're tired.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running and for the club tie, wherever it is.
If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review, or don't. We're not going to tell anyone either way. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.